Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been listening to officials in Washington, D.C. give an update on the deadly mid-air collision in Virginia just outside.
Salvage operations are underway this morning to remove the plane's fuselage from the Potomac River.
The focus is on recovering the airliner first.
Search crews hope that will allow them access areas they haven't been able to reach and bring some closure to the victims' families.
Michael Kelly, Amy Markscore is with you. And, of course, we were all following the tragic story of the American Airlines flight and the helicopter that collided in Washington, D.C., landed in the Potomac River. And the rescue effort soon turned into a recovery effort as all of those aboard that American Airlines flight and the helicopter did perish. And it brought up some questions that I guess I had never thought deeply about before, and that is the perils and the complications of a swift water rescue, especially when it's dark, when it's cold. And to give us some more information on what first responders are dealing with in a situation like that is Sergeant Kurt Merciel. He is a dive team leader with the Missouri Department of Transportation. And Sergeant Merciel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I guess my first question is, how do you begin a recovery effort like the one we saw in the Potomac River where it's dark, it's a swift current, there's jet fuel and metal? You jump in the water, and where do you go with that?
Yeah, there's a very complicated operation that many challenges that they're faced with there. You know, once you make the transition from rescue to recovery, you know, safety then becomes a priority and everything slows down. So the first thing you want to do at that point is let's get a good assessment. Let's really understand the situation. And so you know what the teams are getting into, and that way you're not rushing into something. And you don't want to rush into it for many reasons. First off, it's unsafe. But two, everything needs to be documented, all the evidence involved in a crash, and the investigators need every piece of evidence if they're going to be able to successfully understand what caused the crash and how it could have been mitigated. So it starts with a good assessment.
I guess my first question then, actually, I'll back up. What about when it's still a rescue? What are you doing to speed up that process?
Yeah, you know, in an area like that, they have many resources that are on standby for such an event, and it's an all-call event. You know, you try to get as many personnel in the area, as many assets to flood, and time is of the essence. I mean, you're talking about water that's in the low 40s. Survival time in that environment is minutes, very limited. So you try to flood the area as fast as possible with personnel, and you're looking for any signs of life.
Yeah, Sergeant, and as we all watched this unfold over the last couple of weeks, we heard a lot about the training that goes into this. How do you train for something that's like this? And is training also learning from what's happening right before us right now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Whenever you look at, you know, how you operate, your operating procedures, how you equip, you know, how you devise your risk management strategy and the training that's going to support that, you have to look at other operations and try to learn from them. So there's no doubt that, you know, me as the dive team leader for the Highway Patrol, I'm paying attention to that and trying to study. And at some point, there will be lessons learned that come out from that. And everyone in the industry will be, you know, interested and will study that. But as far as training, it's something that is it happens all the time. I'm actually on a training operation today where we're doing panic-proof training. And it's something that's critical to operate in an environment that those divers are operating in. Because they were called to operate where they couldn't see. You know, the visibility in the water is essentially zero. If it's not, once they start moving things around, it gets stirred up and they can't see. And the water is so cold that their exposure time is limited, and they have to have a significant amount of insulation on, exposure suits, and that reduces mobility and dexterity. So now everything becomes even more difficult in a very difficult environment. So, like what we're doing today as far as panic proofing, you know, when we're in that environment and we're getting entangled into wires and cables that you would see in a crash like this where, you know, airframes come apart, there's tons of debris, sharp metal, all kinds of things that, you know, can entrap you, harm you, damage equipment. And to be able to operate in an environment, you have to be able to control your emotions, slow everything down. And so when you do get entrapped or entangled, it's like, okay, I expected this. I knew it was going to happen. And now I have a thought process, and my training has prepared me for this. Because one of the greatest fears for a diver and the greatest risk is to panic. If you're in that environment, as long as you have air, you have time, and you're fine, as long as you don't panic. But if your emotions get ahead of you, and now you're hyperventilating, and you're not thinking, you're actually trying to flee the situation, then you get further entrapped, and eventually you lose an air source, and it can easily become, you know, consequential. So yeah. Training is ongoing. It's not just the, you know, the art of diving. I mean, that's kind of an elementary thing that we have to master. But like for us today, we're doing at least once a year, we put ourselves through a panic program where we are pushing those emotions. We're operating underwater without access to the surface and losing air source. And that's a very emotional event. But after you learn to realize that, hey, I do have a substantial amount of time that I can think and operate before, you know, I lose consciousness. And so, yeah, training, many steps to it, but that's one that we're actually addressing today.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that goes against everything your body would be telling you to do. You know, you have to calm those emotions. You mentioned having no visibility. So something like the crash in the Potomac, are rescuers quite literally blind when they're underwater and feeling, just literally going by feel?
Yeah, having not been on scene, you know, I look at it and I'm estimating that, you know, they have just less than a foot of visibility.
Wow.
But as soon as you start moving things around, now that goes to zero. So, yes, you're operating without any visibility whatsoever. And at that point, you have to slow all movements. You become very deliberate. You feel your way through things. And it's critical that you understand what the situation is, what piece of evidence you're going for. Like, if you're going to rig something, it's like, hey, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And that may mean that you go to an airfield and you actually practice, you rehearse onto a similar airframe or something. But you try to prepare that diver as much as possible for what they're about to feel under the water. And when they get under, now granted, it's going to be damaged, it's going to be different, but they have somewhat of an idea. And when you can't see, it's and you get used to it, it's like every part of your body becomes a sensor. You feel your way through it. You know, you feel when something rubs against your leg, and you can almost identify what it is. You start to visualize. But the important part is you have to be comfortable in that environment, and you have to have the support and the equipment and the training. Otherwise, it's going to be very dangerous.
Yeah, and then also with the equipment, I guess, is that specialized to protect the divers from very toxic substances like jet fuel? I mean, you're diving into jet fuel.
You know, jet fuel is definitely an issue. I would think that would have been mitigated right off. You know, it will make its way to the surface. You either catch it or you move it from the area. Normally, if we have fuel on the surface, enough fuel that we're worried about ignition, we will not enter the water. We're going to do something to change that environment, whether we actually catch it with, you know, floats, and we can move it or we can absorb it. or you take a boat, you know, the thrust of a boat, and you can actually move it. Here, the current, I think, is going to do most of that work for you. So, yeah, you're going to have to mitigate that issue before you put divers in.
God forbid some type of tragedy like this were to happen in Missouri. Obviously, your organization, Sergeant Kurt Marcil, dive team leader of the Missouri Department of Transportation, would be involved. How big is your dive team, and how many missions are you all having to do on a yearly basis in Missouri?
Yeah, so we're currently staffed with 12 divers. Two of us are full-time divers. The rest are highway patrol members that work different functions within the agency. We normally try to keep 14 on the team. Is a good operating number. We would definitely be involved in an operation like this. And the one where we did work with NTSB and the Coast Guard was when the duck tragedy happened mm-hmm. on Table Rock Lake. Very different than this one, but many of the same moving pieces. And the moving pieces is another one of the challenges that you face, because, you know, when you're used to working with certain groups, you figure out systems. You have habitual relationships and understandings of how you operate. But when you bring in elements, external elements, then it forms a new challenge.
Yeah, and it seems like you would need strong expertise to do this job. Is your team members from across the state and you assemble as needed, or are you all based in Jefferson City, Columbia?
Oh, yeah, so we're spread throughout the state. We have members in basically all major areas of the state. And when an event comes, when our services are needed, we go to wherever it's at. What we found is trying to staff it in a centralized location. It's hard to actually staff that team. It's easier to find expertise and just have them, you know, travel to wherever it's needed.
Yeah, and if you're in a body of water like the Mississippi River, massive and swift water flow, how do you determine how far downstream you have to go that a body could be swept or evidence?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there's no real scientific answer to that. I mean, that's one of our greatest challenges, and we're always trying to accumulate information, but it comes down to a best estimate. And, you know, you look at current speed, you look at water temperature, there's many factors, you know, the composition of the bottom, but there is no hard answer to it. And unfortunately, where they're at, you know, the water is so cold, it affects how a body's going to react in the water. You know, warm water, a victim is going to surface much sooner than in cold water. So it's going to draw out the process of victim recovery due to the temperature.
Well, Sergeant Kurt Marcil, we're so grateful for all of the work you and your team do. And I'm sure that some of the rescues you've had to do, that some of these disasters or tragedies could be prevented. What would you want people to know to help keep themselves and their families safe?
Yeah, I can't speak on aircraft safety, but as far as the waters of Missouri, mm-hmm. you know, most of what we deal with is drownings, boat accidents, and stuff like that. First off is always wear a life jacket when you're out on the water or around the water. Definitely limit or have no alcohol consumption. Those are two of the major contributing factors to our fatalities. And slow your pace. Enjoy the day, but don't push the limits.
That is Sergeant Kurt Marcil, a dive team leader with the Missouri Department of Transportation. Thank you so much for your time and information today, and, of course, for all the work you do. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, guys, and everybody be safe out there.
Thank you so much. Sergeant Kurt Marcil. It makes sense, Michael, that we have a dive team because, I mean, we are a river city, right? We're surrounded by Missouri, Mississippi, Merrimack, you know, Lake of the Ozarks, Table Rock Lake, all of these bodies of waters in Missouri, but it is something you don't think about every day.
Oh, gosh, no. And to be diving in the muddy Mississippi, I mean, like you said, you can't see in front of you. It's all about
insane.
Your other senses on top of rapid water. And, hey, so grateful we have those people who run to those types of situations when the rest of us need help.
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, people who, even as we speak today, are undergoing panic training. Because the human instinct is to panic in that situation. Crazy. He is Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Markscores. I've got a beef with some pharmaceuticals and their commercials, Michael.
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? It's coming next on the Chris and Amy Show. All right. right, Michael Kelly. Generally, I'm in favor of less government, less regulation. But here's the thing. I think we should follow the lead from Europe and ban pharmaceutical commercials.
No more drugs.
I can't stand it. And maybe I'm seeing more than usual because I happen to watch the Hallmark Channel, which maybe is geared towards elderly people. I don't know.
Do you just not like to watch happy people walking in a park, jumping up and down while some lawyer...
Well, that's the thing. And I forgot which comedian said we should act out the side effects. Like, you shouldn't act out the happiness and read the side effects. You should read the happiness, like your blood sugar is lower. And then people act out the side effects, because this one is for Jardiance. And I just want, I want everyone to really marinate here on what the side effects could be.
Let's go.
Serious side effects include increased ketones in blood or urine, which can be fatal. Stop Jardiance and call your doctor right away if you have nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, tiredness, trouble breathing, or increased ketones.
What are ketones?
So, it's a protein or something in your blood.
Who would know that their ketones have gone up? Clearly,
well,
somebody who needs Jardiance?
Jardiance. I had a friend who was diabetic, type 1 diabetes, was recommended a diabetes drug. I don't know if it was this one, but you know there's a lot of them like that. They talk about... ketosis. I think it's called ketosis. We have too many ketones. Okay. He was in the ICU for 3 days.
Oh my.
Yeah. And it was mainly so that he's like, well, I have more freedom in what I can eat because he had a pump, right? Because he was type one, but he took this medicine. He's like, I'm never taking it again. Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Jardiance may cause dehydration that can suddenly worsen kidney function and make you feel dizzy, lightheaded, or weak upon standing. Genital yeast infections in men and women, urinary tract infections, low blood sugar, or a rare life-threatening bacterial infection between and around the anus and genitals can occur.
Oh, hey now.
Wait a minute. What is a life-threatening bacterial infection between the anus and genitals? Why is it there?
I don't know.
What is that?
Sounds like college.
No. Like... think about that. And why is there always a focus on that area with side effects? What's happening?
Well, it's an important area.
Well, why is the bacterial infection there?
And why is it only there that it could be fatal? Could it not be fatal if it came in under my armpit?
I don't know.
But down there, well, you know, it could be fatal.
Oh, we're not done yet.
Call your doctor right away if you have fever or feel weak or tired and pain, tenderness, swelling, or redness in the genital area. Mm. Don't use if allergic to Jardiance. Stop use if you have a serious allergic reaction. Call your doctor if you have rash, swelling, difficulty breathing, or swallowing. You may have increased risk for lower limb loss. Call your doctor.
Wait, what?
You may have increased risk for lower limb loss.
Lower limb loss.
So, okay, we obviously had to focus on the genital areas. They're going through it right now.
But
your genitals are going through it, and now?
They may. You may lose your genitals as a part of that.
I don't know what counts
so
as a lower limb.
If that didn't scare you enough, then you could potentially not only lose your genitals, but your limbs? Just because of this rash or infection?
It's to help with type 2 diabetes. Like, maybe at some point we should encourage more. Like, I know it sucks. I know it sucks that you got to be on a stricter diet. But to me, you don't want to lose your genitals and your lower limbs.
This sounds like some folks that may have diabetes, though. But here's the question. If that is a known side effect, doesn't that correlate that someone then had that rash?
I know.
That wound up either causing them to lose their genitals or their limbs. That had to have happened to somebody if the lawyers are making them say that.
Right. I think
you may have increased risk for lower limb loss. Call your doctor right away if you have new pain or tenderness, sores, ulcers, or infection in your legs or feet.
So go on, say not so fast, CKD. Ask your doctor about Jardiance for chronic kidney disease.
Chronic kidney disease, that's what it's for. I know, I thought it was diabetes. I got confused. I just feel like, is there something that we can do?
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, this is a delicate subject because if you think about what... the pharmaceutical industry has brought to our country, and for that matter, the world, it's on the whole good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, so that's important.
Modern medicine is a miracle.
And but I feel like if I were to go ask my doctor about every drug that I'm told about, my doctor wouldn't have enough time to see any other patient that day other than me.
Well, and if this is for chronic kidney disease, is your doctor not already know about
the best? Yeah, shouldn't your doctor be saying, listen, I got this drug I'd like you to take that may cause you to lose your lower limbs?
Because chronic kidney disease sounds very serious.
Yeah.
It sounds very complicated. It sounds like something you are having discussions with your doctor. Why is the patient saying, hey, I was watching Murder, mm-hmm. She Baked, a peach cobbler mystery, when this commercial came on for Jardiance and chronic kidney disease, is this for me? And the doctor goes, oh, glad you brought that up. Sure.
Right.
Why is the doctor not already onto this? Why are we advertising it? Ask your doctor if it's right for you.
Yeah. No, I'm
know.
With you.
I don't think you're
100% right. But what else would there be on TV besides insurance and pharmaceuticals? That seems to me to be the only people who can afford the ad space.
I know.
Remember when the car dealers used to be on TV all the time? No, sir.
Listen,
now we're telling you hair.
Is Murder,
growing
She
hair
Baked?
On places it's not supposed to be.
Is Murder, She Baked?
Never heard of that show.
Well, it's with Allison Sweeney, who was on The Biggest Loser. And I just want to know, is it really that expensive that they're the only ones who can afford commercials? Yeah. I feel like it's not. I don't want to say it's not must-see TV. I'm just saying.
Murder, She Baked?
Yeah. She's a baker who solves mysteries.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not making this up. You don't
Angela
get this kind
Lansbury
of detail.
Angela Lansbury is getting ripped off.
Angela Lansbury is a little scary sometimes.
But if she ever shows up at your house, close the door.
Murder, She Wrote.
Somebody's going to die.
That's absolutely
But now
right.
the bakers are killing people?
No, they're solving it.
A baker know about killing people?
Come on over. We'll have a Murder, She Baked marathon,
I don't
Michael.
Know. Is there yeast involved? Because that could come as a side effect with that drug.
Michael Kelly, Amy Mark scores. Hey, Bernie Miklas joins us next. Oh, man, that's the sound of pitchers and catchers reporting today as Michael Kelly and I chat with Bernie Miklas. And this Bernie Miklas report is sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. And Bernie, good to talk to you today. This is our first time talking to you post-Super Bowl.
Yeah, there you go. That was a kind of a dud. I just was hoping for a good game. It was pretty boring.
It was.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
Good to be with you guys.
Good to be with you. It was boring. When did you know that the game was over with? Like, I felt like when we went to halftime that, okay, this is either going to be the greatest Super Bowl ever or it's going to be the most boring. And that team came out and looked just as flat as it did in the first half.
Yeah, I thought it was over by halftime simply because the Chiefs had no answer for what the Philadelphia defense was doing. And it was a great game plan by their defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio. I won't get into the weeds with that, but it was basically the perfect plan. And they couldn't block Philadelphia's pass rushers because the Chiefs has had an iffy, shaky offensive line all year, but they couldn't get away with it this time. So they hit Mahomes a lot of times. I mean, a lot of times. Had him on the run. He was confused by what he saw downfield because they were disguising some of their zone coverages. And it's one of the craziest stats I've ever seen for a team as great as the Chiefs have been. At halftime, they had only 23 offensive yards on 20 plays. And I haven't seen that kind of level of dominance in a Super Bowl since – you remember the 1985 Bears with that great Buddy Ryan defense,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they just like destroyed New England. But even then, they gave up some points to New England, and the Chiefs didn't get on the board until it was 34 seconds left in the third quarter. I mean, it was just a total annihilation.
Was Patrick Mahomes just out of his element? It felt like to me, Bernie, as the casual observer, that he was almost running into the rushes at the end there, like stepping into them.
No, he was. They had him completely frazzled, and they had him very unsure of what move to make, to get out of the pocket, escape to the left, escape to the right, try to beat something in the middle. He was very indecisive, and he was also indecisive in terms of, you know, releasing a throw. The thing of it is, we have seen this before. I mean, but Patrick Mahomes is a great, great quarterback. But when they lost to the Tampa Bay Bucks in the 2020 season Super Bowl, they lost 31-9, and the Tampa Bay Bucks just did the same thing to Mahomes. They hit him, sacked him, roughed him up, confused him, and the pressure was so relentless that it just took him out of his comfort zone. He was nowhere near it. So, you know what the takeaway is for me? The Chiefs got to spend some money on an offensive line. They have to protect him better because they've been putting offensive lines together. As great as their record has been, they've been putting their offensive lines together with a lot of scotch tape and baling wire and cheap solutions. And I think they're taking him for granted. I think the guy needs to have a solid offensive line. They got to get away from this mentality of like, well, our offensive line's kind of mediocre, but that's all right. Patrick will figure something out. Well, you saw the consequences on days where he can't figure something out because he didn't have much of a chance to figure anything out because he was just expecting to get banged around like every single time.
Bernie, do you follow Andrew Brandt at all? He is,
I do.
Like with Villanova, and I know he appears regularly on ESPN as a business and legal analyst. His prediction, and this truly was before the Super Bowl, which is insane. I don't know if you saw it or not, but it's been kind of going viral since then. Here's what he said. If it is a not too long of a paragraph, but I'll read it. And this is Andrew Brandt. I know the Eagles can look almost disinterested at times, but in the end, talent rules. They are the most talented team in the league, and I'm not sure it's close. That talent advantage, especially with offensive and defensive lines, will prove out in the Super Bowl. And yes, I don't think the game will be close. The Chiefs are the better story if they win, but they are not the best team in this game. Bold prediction, I predict Mahomes will have one of the worst games of his career. It won't just be a subpar game, it will be a downright poor game. I'm not sure he's seen a defensive line like this one the Eagles have, and they will wreak havoc on the Chiefs' line.
Well, he did see a defensive line like that with Tampa Bay because they did the same thing, you know, in his only other Super Bowl loss. But I give Andrew Brandt a lot of credit because he followed the courage of his convictions, to use that cliche. I did not. I spent a couple weeks before, you know, in the run-up to the game saying there's no question that Philadelphia is the better team. There's no question this is the best team he's faced in a long time. They have no real weaknesses. On and on and on about how many terrific – all the terrific ways that the Philadelphia Eagles were an outstanding team. But yet, I couldn't shake this thing of like, well, this will find a way to win. Like, in other words, the pragmatic part of my brain knew that, okay, clearly the Chiefs are not as good across the board as the Eagles. My pragmatism gave way to just the narrative and just the belief in a team that has won so much. You just expect them to find a way to do it again.
Yeah, I got used to relying on Chiefs magic, whatever that means. But, okay, Patrick Mahomes, not yet 30. Do you think the Chiefs will win another Super Bowl in the next 3 years?
Oh, I think they have an excellent chance. I think the AFC is getting tougher. I think there's going to be more challenges. I think the division is getting tougher because Sean Payton has shown he's bringing Denver up real fast. And they made the playoffs, and they have a good young quarterback. Harbaugh with the Chargers, really good coach. They have a really good quarterback in Justin Herbert. You know, and then you look around. I don't know what to make of the Raiders. They're not a factor right now, but they could be if they hire the right people. So I think it's going to be tough in his own division. And, you know, it's not like the Ravens and the Bills and the Bengals are going anywhere. There's some other teams like Houston's going to get better and better. I just think it's going to be tougher and tougher and tougher, and I think they have to transition. They've got to fix the offensive line, and they also have to establish a downfield passing attack. Patrick Mahomes this year, short pass after short pass after short pass after short pass. It made the other team it made it easy to defend him. They didn't have to worry about getting beat downfield. They need to establish a deep passing threat, because that'll get some of the wolves off of Patrick Mahomes' neck. Just when they realize, well, wait a minute, you know, if he just gets a couple of seconds, he can hit a big play. Right now, we don't care because he's only going to throw a short pass underneath the coverage. That's the best that they can do.
Hard to believe. It's the end of the football season and on till next year. And now we move on to the boys of summer. And Bernie, I'm excited about this Cardinal team, not because I think it's going to be, you know, a team that wins 100 games, but it's this hard reset that we're doing. It's an expectation that we're starting over and we're going to build from the ground. Does that narrative get a little muddy and maybe even problematic if Nolan Arenado is a part of this club?
Yeah, it does, from the standpoint that, and let me look up something that I was making some notes to myself, so I'll share this. You know, if Arenado is back, I mean, the bottom line is this, that this is when you're talking about building your roster with what you have. I don't see how you can put together a lineup that has Arenado, Burleson, Donovan, Gorman, and Walker. Like, in other words, where they're all be playing all the time. There's no way to squeeze all of them in. And I think Burleson would be the guy that would probably be penalized by that. And also, if Arenado's still with the team, Thomas Ajayi, there's really not a meaningful role for him in the ball club. If Arenado's not on the team, well, the congestion eases. So JC can play, and he'll have a bench role, and he'll contribute a lot. Burleson will get plenty of run at first base, maybe in left field a little bit, the designated hitter. But with Arenado, the things that they really want to do, it'll be very limited. They won't be able to go all in with what they're calling a reset.
This has got to be weird. I mean, here you have a world-class player in Nolan Arenado who may be showing up to Jupiter for spring training, clearly may want to go somewhere else. The team wants him to go somewhere. It's just going to be weird, isn't it?
It's been weird the whole offseason. I think John Mozeliak was given a reason to believe that Arenado would have accepted a trade to Houston. And I think I have no idea what happened. I don't know if it was a communications snafu. I have no idea what. Mo would not have been as confident about being able to make a trade to send him somewhere unless he thought, well, he'll go to Houston. So I don't know what went wrong there, because we know he didn't go to Houston. So now they have to wait for Alex Bregman to make a decision, because it's the domino effect. As soon as Alex Bregman decides where to go, hey, the Red Sox may or may not be a likely destination. And there's some reports about the Dodgers kicking the tires and the Yankees. I don't know. I mean, there's been seven million rumors. I tend to try to filter through them. I think Boston, if they don't get Bregman, still would be the most likely destination.
Yeah, that was going to be my question next, Bernie. How is it a guarantee that when Bregman signs, you know, Arenado can move? Or do you think there's a good chance that even after Bregman signs somewhere, Arenado is still a Cardinal?
I think if he signs in Boston, you know, I think Arenado most definitely would be a Cardinal. I don't know. I mean, I can't say that 100% all year, because they could always maybe at the trade deadline see if there's a market for him and what he would like to do. The irony of this is like, I don't think they've gone far enough with this reset. They talk about runway, and runway implies, you know, the Jets are cleared for takeoff, all these young players. And the runway's pretty crowded. And they still have, like, a lot of players back from who were part of their team last season. And I think they're also – the Cardinals are caught in between. You know, they tried to billboard this reset thing, and yet then there's contradictory messages about, oh, well, we think we can be better than people expect. We think we're going to be really good. We're going to – you know, and that's okay. Optimism is part of the spring. But my point is, if you really want to get down to it, if they really believe they have a chance to win and be a surprise team, they're a better team with Nolan Arenado at third base. They really are, because he's still a terrific defender. His offense is still slightly above league average. So, you know, it's not as if he's a liability. His salaries are a concern. But if they really want to win – and they're sort of hinting that, like, well, we really do want to win. You know, they're keeping all the same pitchers and everything else. Well, Arenado, you got a better chance with him still here. So I don't know. There's even a related thing, and I'm sorry I'm stumbling around a little bit. If Arenado's your third baseman, Lars Nootbaar's probably going to be your center fielder. And the thing about that is, to me, is good, because the Cardinals' outfield offense last year was horrendous. And Nootbaar, you sacrifice a little bit defensively, but he gives you a much healthier offense as you look at the outfield as a whole.
Well, we're giving away tickets. We're giving away tickets again to see the Doobie Brothers at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater September 4th. Do not call now. It's not now. It will be at some point during the show.
You'll just be disappointed. The phone will just keep ringing.
Yeah,
and
don't
nobody
call now.
Answer.
Nothing will happen. But at some point during today's show, we will give away Doobie Brothers tickets. Michael, I do want to get to a text we got from a mutual friend, Andy Banker.
Yes.
Over at Fox 2. He said, he texted in, "Murder She Baked? That cannot be a real thing." Let me tell you, Mr. Andy Banker, it is very much a real thing.
It is.
It's on the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries channel. I need some of our listeners to come to my defense here. I am being lambasted by Michael Kelly here.
This sounds horrible. I mean, listen, it's obviously a spoof on Murder, She Wrote.
One of my favorites.
And Murder, She Wrote was a quality program that put it together in an hour, and she was a writer.
Yeah.
So does baking come into every aspect of the murders she solves?
Yeah. So her name is Hannah Swenson. That's Allison Sweeney's character. Uh-huh. She's a baker, and she owns the Cookie Jar. That's the name of her store.
Okay.
And she always happens upon dead bodies. I mean, so did Angela Lansbury. Let's be real. Angela Lansbury saw like 175 homicides. That's a lot.
Sometimes Angela Lansbury would show up at houses, and by the morning, people were dead in that house.
Yeah. That also happens in Murder, She Baked. There's also the Curious Caterer mysteries. She's a caterer who solves mysteries. But 314-436-7900, please, somebody in our audience, come to my defense and say, "Amy, I get it. Murder, She Baked is a great show."
Here's the other problem, though, Amy, is that it's a 10-year-old show. They haven't come out with a new episode since 2015.
Well, I mean, classics live on forever.
We're in 2025.
They just had a Murder, She Baked marathon last night. I watched an episode of it, or a movie. Well, The Curious Caterer is new. Okay, here we go. I love KMOX. I love the listeners. From a 314, I love, all caps, I love Murder, She Baked. Allison Sweeney is the best. I always watch those Hallmark movies. See?
Signed Ethel.
People get it. Maybe.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't want to see violence and pain and grief and suffering and longing. And you may think, well, it's a murder mystery. It's violence. That's right. Someone does get killed. But it's not graphic. And they solve it.
Right.
They solved it last night. And if you can't solve it with like hot chocolate and cookies, I just want no part of it.
I understand, but you realize we're living in a TikTok world. How do you think the Murder, She Baked would sell to the kids these days?
Oh, like, they won't watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you essentially have the viewing habits and tastes of an 80-year-old?
Yeah. They get it.
Good for you.
They get it. Like,
did
I love
that 60 Minutes episode? Whoo!
Well,
it was so good.
Well, more like TCM, like you know, Cary Grant and Clark Gable. I've seen my fair share of Esther Williams movies.
I don't give it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Murder, She Baked, Michael. We'll have a Murder, She Baked party.
Marathon?
Yes.
I can only imagine. I imagine maybe it's like The Bachelor. There's themes that go with the murder. Like, this is our snickerdoodle episode.
All right, guess who's joining us next? You're never going to believe it. It's going to be unbelievable. John Hancock is joining us next. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.